from the Mutual Broadcasting System. This is STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk. Now, retired Marine Intelligence Officer and globally recognized risk expert, Hal Kempfer.
Well, welcome to STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk. We're going to talk about some really amazing concepts, if you will, proposals that have been put forward or announced, I should say, by President Zelensky of Ukraine. And both of them very much involve the United States. Frankly, this is one of those things that came, that kind of caught me by surprise. I didn't know there was a discussion item. But the first thing is what President Zelensky is calling a drone mega deal, or a mega deal on drones, depending on which time you listen to him. But I'm going to kind of explain what he's talking about there. It's a fascinating thing, and it really helps the United States in a critical area where we're deficient. And the other is an idea of opening up the Ukrainian battlefield as kind of a test and evaluation lab, if you will, for modern weapons, that they can go out there and do that. And not the first time that that's been done. I would submit to you that every time there's been a war, there is two things with wars. Is number one, you have a rapid increase in the type of weapons and technology being employed in the war. And number two is the war itself becomes something of a testing ground for new weapons to some degree, that they will take them out there and try them out in the battlefield a lot faster, a lot quicker, and certainly with a higher degree of understanding and awareness of how they actually will perform in combat than at other times. So let me kind of dig into this, all right? What President Zelensky has said is there will be a drone mega deal with the United States. And I'm not going to say that the details are really well fleshed out. They're still, in my mind, a bit scant. But it appears what the deal is that Ukraine will provide the United States with drones, particularly inexpensive battlefield-tested drones. A lot of them first-person view drones that Ukraine produces at a prodigious rate. They have a tremendous drone production capability, and that they'll provide us with that and drone know-how. And that's one thing they have. You know, it's one thing to say, well, don't we already know how Ukraine's doing on the battlefield? In a larger sense, yes, we have a lot of knowledge, a lot of really good intelligence. We understand the battlefield dynamics. That's not the same as training a U.S. drone operator the best way to zigzag, yank, and bank their drone across an active battlefield in order to hit the target and to avoid having the drone taken out. That sort of intuitive know-how, knowledge, experience, if you will, that's something the Ukrainians have in large quantities. They've got a lot of drone operators out there with a lot of combat drone experience, and that's stuff that they can bring to us that we can incorporate in however we train our folks. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if we bring Ukrainian drone operators out of Ukraine and have them train Western and U.S. and Western drone operators as well. So they're going to provide all that. And then what we're going to do is we're going to keep providing them military aid, military capabilities. We might actually at some point be buying drones from them. There might be some sort of current account where we buy drones, or it might be a barter system where we are exchanging U.S. military weapons for their drone stuff, or it might be a mix of both. I think we're going to see how that rolls out. But it will provide in some way, shape, or form, directly or indirectly, a big capital infusion into the Ukrainian drone industry. And right now, one of the big problems that Ukraine has run into is that they have ramped up production, but they don't necessarily have the capital, if you will, to produce drones at the full extent, at the full capacity of the production they have. This will do that. And by the way, simple economics, you end up with economies of scale. The more drones that you produce, the lower cost per unit going out the door. So what this will do is drop down the cost to Ukraine for producing its own drones as well. So there's I hate to use this phrase, I think it's way overworked, but this does kind of have a win-win feel to it. The other thing it'll do is it'll address what the U.S. needs. One thing, the U.S. has a lot of high-end drones. It's not fair to say the U.S. is completely behind the drone thing. Now, the U.S. was probably way ahead of the drone thing for many, many years. During the war on terror, we employed drones in ways that they'd never been thought of before. We put on drones something kind of new. We actually put missiles on our drones and used them to take out ground vehicles and do all sorts of stuff. So we have used drones in a lot of different ways. What we don't have are a lot of inexpensive first-person view drones, and we don't have lesser expensive interim or medium-range drones. Something, you know, we have stuff like Global Hawk or Predator or a variety of other things, which are very expensive systems, very capable systems, but extremely expensive. What we don't have is that lower-end stuff. And one thing in war is you need mass. You need a lot of material. You need a lot of weapons. Drones are weapons, whether they're used for actually destroying a target or surveilling a target or whatever they're doing. And so you need a lot. And our problem is we have a lot of high-end, very expensive drones, but we don't have a lot of lower-end drones. And frankly, in the U.S. market, we don't produce a lot of those lower-end drones. That's not something we do. And that's a problem we have. So this addresses a shortfall that the U.S. has from a military standpoint, not just in Europe, but worldwide, because we're going to need those drones all over the place. We desperately need the type of drones that Ukraine produces in great abundance. Drones have revolutionized the battlefield. It's been estimated that 70% or more of the casualties, to include taking out vehicles, armored vehicles, stuff like that, on the battlefield have been tied to the use of drones. It has completely changed the way that we have looked at war fighting on the battlefield because of these drones. The troops that are on the field of battle are constantly, as it said, they're constantly looking up. In fact, as new troops come in from North Korea or whatever, or in some cases, there are Westerners that have gone over to fight with the Ukrainians. They have constantly come back and said the same thing, which is one of the things that's really different with the Ukrainian battlefield is they're constantly having to look up. You know, the drones are kind of a ubiquitous presence, whether reconnaissance drones or kamikaze kill drones or whatever. They're a constant presence that they have to be aware of, and it's changed the way that they dig in, how they camouflage their shelters, a lot of different things. Certainly how they move about the battlefield, everything. Drones have changed the battlefield, and the speed and the scope of how these things have been adapted has really in many ways been stunning. It's gone from some years back, ISIS would use these first person view drones, these little cheap drones, and they would drop a grenade behind a wall, and it was called the, you know, kind of a poor man's Air Force or something. And now you're looking at them as they are kind of dominating the entire battlefield. By the way, don't forget what Ukraine did with this Operation Spiderweb, where they used covert operations to send trucks full of these boxes that were filled with drones, and the drivers didn't even know. And they went out and they parked their vehicles near Russian military bases way inside Russia, all the way up near the Murmansk Peninsula, shooting all the way to the Far East in some ways. And then on cue, the box lids open up and all these drones pop out and they start attacking aircraft at these bomber bases. It was really an amazing thing how that was done. That was drones. Now, keep in mind, that was also about very well-executed covert operation. But it also brought up the thing that's really dominating discussions these days, which is drone swarms. We're talking air right now, but keep in mind, drones, you're not just talking unmanned aerial vehicles. You'll have ground vehicles. You'll have unmanned surface vehicles on the water. You'll have unmanned underwater vehicles under the water. There's a lot of different drones that are out there. Now, one of the things with drones is, you know, with the troops, the drone operators, they're not always in direct contact with the enemy. So in order to reward, to, you know, in order to kind of capture what they're doing and make sure that they're getting the awards and all the things that they need as military professionals, Ukraine has actually started to gamify what they do, which is really kind of interesting, because if you look at, you know, they're wearing the first person view goggles and they're flying the drones around. And yes, it does look a lot like a computer game. And yes, they do recruit from that demographic where people are very comfortable playing, you know, computer games. And that's who they have out there, or online games, I should say. And that's who they have doing a lot of this stuff, is because they have a lot of innate skills, a lot of innate capability based on what they've been doing growing up. That's kind of what they've done. So what they've done is they've added points, kind of like you have points in a game, and they've been using that. The other thing I would point out, though, is by using points, you know, when they get, quote, kills, unquote, or destroy targets or whatever, that it also is a great tool for better assessing battle, for better doing, I should say, calculating the battle damage assessment. It provides a certain granularity that they didn't have before, because now it's tied to rewarding or awarding, I should say, those troops, those units for what they're doing specifically on the battlefield. So it's rather interesting that they're doing that at the same time. Now, what Ukrainian troops and Russian troops are experiencing on the battlefield is just something that we haven't seen in previous wars. This three-dimensional battlefield with that third dimension being so close in and so immediate is a completely different thing. And what the drones are doing is they're shifting the mindset. And they're shifting the mindset at the small unit. I mean, when you're talking about a fire team, you know, we used to talk about the different parts of a, you know, like a four-man fire team or something like that. Well, one of the parts now is that at least one of those guys has got to be looking up constantly. You've got to be looking up to see stuff. By the way, I should also mention that they have, the Ukrainians, by necessity, have adapted a 5.56 round to act as a counter-drone, like mini shotgun shell. So what they're doing is they'll have one gunner will have an assault rifle, but his primary purpose is to shoot down drones that are coming in close to the team. I just find that kind of, you know, very tactical adaptation to a strategic innovation to be rather interesting to see. Now, some of the drones that Ukraine has, we've talked a lot about these, you know, like quadcopter first-person view drones that are flying around in very close proximity to the battlefield that are being used a lot of times as kamikaze, flying directly into bunkers, directly into vehicles, directly into troop concentration. Yes, we see that, but there's also some longer-range drones up to around 1,000 kilometers or more. These are fixed-wing drones. They're not expensive drones, very different from our view. They're not expensive drones, but they fly them out there on these long-range kamikaze missions, and they've been using these to great effect. And frankly, they did a big attack on Moscow just recently, where I don't know if they flew in 100 or 150 drones. It's not quite clear, but it was a lot of drones. Now, I would also say that the Russians are using drones too. They have these Iranian designed, and it used to be Iranian built, although right now they produce a ton of these drones actually in Russia. The Iranian Shahid drones, which they use as essentially kamikaze drones. And they've been using these to great effect, and they've been doing mass attacks. I think at one point they had over 700 drones and missiles, primarily drones, but quite a few missiles that came in, and they've been routinely doing these mass wave attacks of hundreds of drones coming into Ukraine over time. And part of this is the counter drone capability has to catch up, and that is not quite there. Although there are some interesting things being done with lasers that, if widely adapted or adopted, could quickly change the battlefield dynamic of how drones are able to be used, particularly around going after major urban targets. If they had a bunch of these laser counter drone capabilities or laser counter drone systems all around capable of doing stuff. Another thing Russia's done is they put these horrific thermobaric warheads. That's kind of a vacuum bomb, an aerosol bomb. When it comes in, it just explodes, puts out a flammable spray, if you will, like an aerosol in the air, and then it explodes, causing phenomenal overpressure, phenomenal damage. It's a high temperature explosion, basically dispersing a very flammable fuel that ignites in the presence of atmospheric oxygen, if you will. It produces an extremely high temperature as well, overpressure, and as you can imagine, some pretty horrible casualties. Well, they've been fitting their drones with these things. Need I say, if you're firing at civilians, that's a clear violation of the law of war, the Geneva Convention. But the Russians don't seem to really care about abiding by the law of war, Geneva Convention. They've been doing that. I have not seen anything like that with the Ukrainian side. But, you know, thermobaric weapons have been used in this war back and forth. The first time I've seen them actually used on drones. So that's a little bit of a change. Now, the second thing that President Zelensky talked about was using, I should mention before I go to that, let me tell you, one of the reasons that we want these drones, DJI is one of the biggest drone companies in the world. About 90% of consumer drones worldwide as of last year came from DJI. They produce high quality drones at an extremely low price. And dare I allude to the fact that China may be subsidizing DJI in order to capture market share and to knock out other countries like the US from being able to produce drones that compete with these things. But these are extremely capable drones, all right? And they have, you know, they're mostly quadcopter type drones, high-end camera systems. They can do a lot of different things, and they're used extensively in television film industry, among a lot of other things out there. So they produce these things. They've also been used by military and police forces, and terrorist groups have used DJI drones as well. And so we don't have anything that really competes with that. So opening up the drone market, if you would, or getting drones from Ukraine would actually fill that gap that we have, because we can't compete with these DJI drones. All right. So that would make it would be a big, big deal. Now, the other thing that Zelensky opened up was the idea of using the battlefield as a test evaluation site for Western weapons. That's actually interesting. That has a number of things. You know, what it would provide the United States and other Western powers is the ability to get these weapons out there, you know, do the preliminary tests and then hand them off to the Ukrainians. They can literally, you know, give them some training on how to employ them. And then we can actually see how they work on the battlefield. So instead of trying to simulate the entire battlefield, we get a quick and dirty, this is how it worked out. This was what went well. This is what didn't go so well. And so it could accelerate our innovation cycle. And we often talk about OODA loop, observe, orientation, decision, action. Well, this would be kind of the OODA loop, but it's the innovation cycle. How quickly, you know, we can get out there and observe how they would do, orient to the battlefield as it is, make a decision, take action, do improvements, changes, whatever it is on those particular weapon systems. And for Ukraine, it would also give them the ability of tactical or operational surprise. They could be introducing weapons on the battlefield, which would keep the Russians constantly guessing as to what they're up against. The Russians generally are rather stodgy. Bad training, bad leadership. They have a lot of bad equipment. They've been pulling a lot of their tanks and armored vehicles out of war stocks. These are vehicles that were built in the 60s and 70s, and they've been in mothballs. They've been bringing those things out and throwing them on the battlefield, and not a very survivable platform, but certainly with some of these very innovative modern weapons, a far less survivable platform. So what this would do is potentially, well, it's, I know it sounds kind of bad, but it causes a greater amount of attrition of Russian forces on the battlefield and increases the cost to the Russians on the battlefield. Now, the risk you take with that is you may use these weapons on the battlefield. They may not work that well. And so that is a risk. Or they get captured by the Russians and they reverse engineer it. That's obviously a risk as well. But, you know, generally speaking, this is a rather interesting idea. And I'm assuming that they're going to kind of charge Western arms companies for doing this. So it's going to bring in some extra capital to them. This has implications around the world. This has implications, as does the drone mega deal, have implications for what the U.S. is doing far away. For example, in the West Philippine Sea, South China Sea area, what's happening with Taiwan on the Korean Peninsula and elsewhere around the world. All of these things have tremendous second, third order effects. They will in many ways change the way that we do business. Rather interesting. We're going to see how this plays out, but we could see some big changes happening really fast this fall. And I'm kind of interested to see how this is going to work. So a couple of major initiatives by Ukraine involving the United States, involving Ukraine and other Western powers as well. And it could have far-reaching implications well beyond the battlefields of Ukraine. Thanks for listening to Strat. Please go to stratpodcast.com. You can go to my YouTube page at Hal Kempfer TV. And you can also go to my website at gripsa.com. Anywhere you get podcasts, this is available. Hopefully you'll see me on News Nation, Live Now, other networks. I just got off doing just before I did this, I got off with Fox 11 here in Los Angeles. And so anyway, thanks again for listening and watching Strat.